What is your substance now? All right, quickly you say spirit. You know that. But what about the next question? Are you flesh and blood? You're willing to say I'm spirit, but are you willing to say I'm not flesh and blood? You see how easily we can fall into a trap? Now, there must come a time when, without thought, there's no need for you to even put the words to your mouth, but you simply know that you cannot be flesh and blood and be spirit. You cannot be right here and be spirit. You must be everywhere. Still the alphabet. Do you trust God to be perfect, doing what is perfect? You say, oh, yes, I do. Fine. If you really do, you'll never have another worry in your life. All of our problems again come to a distrust that God is perfect and is doing what is perfect. An unawareness that only my spirit is here, there, and everywhere. Now, all of this becomes the working spiritual alphabet before you begin to write words and sentences and live out the experiences of that alphabet. Because when you're practicing, even partially, what we've talked about, then you're not in a wrong selfhood, a non-self, and consequently you're not separated from the Spirit of God. And for you, even though you cannot see it, everywhere your spirit is walking where the world is seeing water, where the world is seeing land, where the world is seeing air. They aren't there. Only your spirit is walking the earth. For you, there is no land, no sea, no air. There is your Christ spirit everywhere, and in that consciousness is your dominion over land, sea, and air. May seem out of reach. It was probably out of reach for the prodigal who turned home, but the father ran out to greet him. The father within doeth the works. Your job is to accept the father within as the presence of your everywhere spirit here, making you one with your spirit everywhere. And right facing that is this debt to the belief that I am flesh and blood, that I am limited, that I am person, that I was born on such a day in such a place, that I have these things I must do, that if I don't do them, they won't get done. All of that is the wrong level of spiritual living. That's mortal living, and you know it. Spiritual living says, I only have one job, and that is to be spirit. In order to experience it, you must be it. And let the chips fall. And as you become more and more conscious of spirit, your tomorrow will be a spiritual tomorrow, with spiritual fruitage. And you find the things you haven't been able to accomplish through the might and power of the body and the mind begin to shape up, because spirit never fails. Now, maybe the spiritual alphabet that we've talked about so far can't be condensed in a few words, but I'm going to leave it here. Whoever wants to look at it can in the intermission or after class. It's fine with me if you make copies of it completely. I didn't get around to it because it just came out, I think, this morning. But at any rate, you're welcome to look at it, make copies, or do whatever you wish. This must be your daily Bible. Not necessarily in the form given to you today, but something akin to it. So you catch yourself when you're stepping out of who you are and wailing at the moon saying, "Why did you do this to me? Nobody's done anything to you. Karma is automatic. Step out of the perfect kingdom of God, which is your living spirit." And you may call it divine punishment, but it isn't so. And if you get a reward, it isn't from God. It's from stepping back into your identity. I suppose we could pause a while, take a little breather, and then be back in 5 minutes. In this 11th chapter, we have a few statements to look at. Your journey begins, this is the spiritual journey, the real journey begins only when you come to the realization that going on as you have been, you're never going to learn the truth. Now, I like to feel that when Joel said this, when it was said through Joel, it wasn't said to the level we're working at. But nevertheless, it comes into contact with the level we're working at as we go along. You're never going to learn the truth, that is, what lies behind this universe, because it's not to be known with the mind. Now, you know that physical science cannot tell you anything about Christ, because it's not to be known with the physical mind, the physical senses, the physical brain. There's no way to know anything about Christ. And Christ is the identity of God on earth. So if you keep squeezing truth into the mind, you're the one Joel is talking to right here. Stop. You cannot know God, you cannot know Christ, you cannot know the invisible universe behind the appearing world in your mind. You must come to the end of faith, the end of hope, the end of the belief that the human mind is ever going to reveal spiritual truth. That could have gone out our spiritual alphabet. If God does not speak, if you do not hear what he says, there's going to be no answer. All right, I guess that covers the question that we had, or rather the statement. Is God thinking thoughts through you? If God does not speak, you do not hear what he says, there's going to be no answer. If you are still probing around in your mind, hoping for God to do something or change something, you're waiting for that which can never happen. Whatever is going to happen is an activity of your consciousness. Now, we covered that with a statement that your tomorrow is your consciousness today, and if it's in matter, that's what you reap tomorrow. If it's in spirit, that's what you reap. Right in here, he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. He that soweth to the spirit shall of the spirit reap life everlasting. You'll find the same statement right here in the same 6th chapter, said in a different way. I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger. He that believeth on me shall never thirst. Your spirit is the bread of life. Your spiritual identity is what is meant by believing on me. Everything dovetails. Everything is repeating, 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 so that ultimately you will let go of rowing on the sea of the mind and take Christ aboard as your identity. And then instantly the ship will be on the shore. Right now, he says, drop out of your thought any belief that an error of yours brought about any of your problems. It was not that way at all. Forgive yourself right now. Forget your past or present sins of omission or commission. Forgive yourself by recognizing the impersonal nature of evil, that only ignorance of spiritual principles causes problems. And what is the basic spiritual principle? God is all. The allness of God, or the ignorance of the allness of God, which is the cause of karma. The allness of God, accepted, defended, lived in, to which you dedicate all that you do, and let that allness alone be the law unto you, rejecting all else that says, I am here, when only the Spirit of God is here. Let's pretend we're dead to the flesh right now. Can you see that's the beginning of something else? What do you think you're going to be when the flesh actually is no more? What something else will you be? Do you not see this as preparation to be that something else now instead of then? To come to the place where that something else that you will be someday, you accept now and live in it. And this is what Spirit is pushing you to do. You're not going to be an appearance called matter forever. What will you be? Why can't you be that now? You're not going to become that. God is all. The allness of God accepted means God isn't going to be different tomorrow. God is all right here now as my being. Why should I wait 50 years to be that which I am now? And so in the deadness to the belief in materiality and mortality, you come out into the beginning glimmer of being that now, and the fascination of it. And you say, why, that's like walking on water. It is precisely that. Being now what you are is like walking on water. Where are you? You're in the invisible, aren't you? You're in the infinite. What are you standing on? Nothing. You don't stand on anything. You are the Spirit of God. Now suppose you were able to go a little further with that. Suppose you were able to actually experience yourself in the invisible, not in material form. You know that's what it will be someday when you're not in material form. Why can't you experience it now? If you believe on me, I, the Father within, will go before you. I'll make those crooked places straight. I'll perfect and perform that which you are appointed to do. I will be your wine and your water. I will be a lamp unto your feet. You see that it's not you to do. It's you to step out of the false sense of self And lo and behold, it already is done. I am, not I will be. And that's how you step out of this thin veil. You accept the truth. You get on the ship. But you also accept that the presence of my own spiritual being is here. You accept truth and spirit. And you might find that instantly you're on the shore of reality. And the more you are able to devote attention and time to this, the more you will see this is the inevitable fact of life. You will walk in the invisible sense of self as pure spirit before you drop the material form. You will. And you will know, too, that there is no material form to drop. For the experience of the incorporeal self is the realization that material form never was. The concept called form, the thought atoms called form, are revealed as nothing more than the mesmerism of the senses. You walk right out of the changing non-being into being. You won't dissolve. You won't disappear. You will simply walk in another level of self. The level revealed by the Master as the force behind the visible, which functions so perfectly that nothing can ever change it, that all human powers are wasted in their futile attempt to change this perfect invisible force of self. Through the mind, will you understand that? No. Only by stepping out of mind and matter. Out of theoretical knowledge. Into spiritual experience. Permitting yourself to do that. Making the effort and repeating the effort. Until for you, there is a moment when there is no material you and no material world. First glimpse of the pure at heart. You were born, says Joel, into a material sense of life. Therefore, you've been sowing to the flesh all your human life. To be born into the average family means to be born into the strife, the struggle of earning a living, being apprehensive about the body, into the consciousness that sows to flesh, pleasures of the flesh, pain of the flesh. But who? Who has ever told you? Who has ever heard of the invisible spirit that is in us, which is the spirit of God in man? Who directed your attention to the spirit of God in your neighbor or in the sinner? To the fact that not only saints but all sinners have the same spirit of God in them. And that only your ignorance of this truth brings upon you the discords of the flesh and of disease. One message, isn't it? One perfect, beautiful message forcing us to not just stand there looking, but to move out into it. Do you perceive then, says Joel, behind this visible universe there is an invisible spiritual presence, power, and law. That which is visible is really made of that which is invisible. This physical form is really made of an invisible force, an invisible substance, and the senses just catch this level of it and wear their mental garment of flesh, which is never really there. The allness of spirit, the allness of God, your basic principle. If you're sowing, and that means where you concentrate, where you put your faith and trust, the way you live. If your sowing is entirely on the materialistic plane, your reaping must be on that plane. And since everything in the material realm is constituted of both good and evil, you will be volleying back and forth between good and evil, between abundance and lack, sickness and health, life and death. Now, a very basic question is, well, what is sowing to the spirit and what is sowing to the flesh? And we can all answer that, but let's take his words. It might change some thought you have. Sowing to the flesh means putting your faith in the visible world. Machinery, dollar bills, securities, governments, man whose breath is in his nostril. Now, isn't that strange? We're not to put our faith in men, in women, in people. It says so. Don't put your faith in man whose breath is in his nostril, and that covers 4 billion people. So what will you put your faith in, if not that person? In your identity, where he stands. That's what. In your identity as spirit, where he appears to be. And if you want to include him as spirit, go ahead. But don't exclude you. It isn't enough to know he is spirit. No, no. He is spirit, and that spirit that he is, I am. We must have the two as one. We can't have he is spirit over there and I am spirit over here. No, we're one spirit. So that's the dimension you go into in your faith. Not in man, whose breath is in his nostrils, but in the presence of the one spirit, which is the invisible Christ of him and of me. That is what I have faith in. That's sowing to the spirit. Sowing to the spirit means acknowledging the spiritual as the basis of the harmony of the visible. To acknowledge spiritual power in all your ways. To acknowledge spiritual law as governing you from waking in the morning to night and from night to morning. Acknowledging spirit as the substance, law, activity, and reality of being. Then you will be praying without ceasing. Once you have only spirit, you're praying without ceasing. There's no break in your knowledge that only spirit is. That's without ceasing. Only spirit. And you will be knowing the truth that makes you free. All this is sowing to the spirit without ceasing. You don't take a coffee break when you're sowing to the spirit. Even the spirit behind that cup of coffee must be accepted. All is invisible spirit, and it is your spirit. Without the vision. Unless you know that the invisible spirit everywhere is your spirit, you've got the vision. And you've got this little fellow out here trying to squeeze things into his mind. But you can let go when it's all your spirit. When you know that, you can let go and trust the spirit to be everywhere, the perfection of God in action. The last statement I've selected from this chapter is, you would be surprised what happens in your personal life when you come to an actual realization that there is nothing good or evil in this world. Nothing good or evil in this world. That should be clear, because all there is your spirit where the world appears. I made a note to have a little meditation on something else in this chapter. The last page of it. The only substance this evil has, and this evil refers to the imperfections we allegedly suffer, the only substance this evil has is the carnal mind. Now, you know that means the universal carnal mind, the universal mortal mind, because there is none. And that which does not exist functions as the individual human mind. Universal non-existence, universal hypnotism becomes a personal hypnotism. And now we have evil where only my perfect spirit is. Spirit is, and the evil is not. The belief in two powers. The belief that beside your spirit, beside God, there is something else that can be a power. But there's nothing else, period. So how can there be another power? If you grow in your realization of one infinite self, spirit, there can only be one power, the power of that spirit. The allness of God, the allness of the Spirit of God, as the spirit of all who walk in the appearances called forth. But now there no longer is any belief in two powers, meaning a power beside the power of spirit, entertained in my consciousness. There cannot be two powers in a purely spiritual universe, created by a pure God. There cannot be both good and evil in God. And God being all, there cannot be both good and evil, because there's no evil in God. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. God is one, and God is love, not in combinations of good and evil, not a combination of reward and punishment. God is one. This consciousness dwelt with ultimately leads us to the realization, which is the very title of the next chapter, and which is the consciousness I'm hoping we will all walk away with as we begin our month sabbatical. God revealing himself as Christ on earth, with nobody missing, nobody left out, nothing to be improved, nothing to be corrected, just God revealing himself as Christ on earth, and you come along and say, that I am. Now that's going to be our 12th chapter, the final chapter of the January series, something out of John. All this is preliminary to the month. And to me, this month is just as important as every Sunday we've had. Because in this month, you're getting time without a change of message to dwell in what will be established next week. God revealing himself as Christ on earth, where you are, as your being, as the being of Tom, Mary, Jones, and Harry, as the invisible self of this world. You see, we will learn to dwell in that consciousness, and if we spend our month doing that, when you come back in March, you'll come back to the book Realization of Oneness, which is precisely what you will have been doing for 1 month. Oh, I know you've been doing it beside that, but this will be 1 month of nothing else. The one infinite consciousness I am, which is God revealing himself as Christ on earth. And so next week, we hope to light the fuse that will enable you for that month to follow, to walk in that consciousness, to let it grow, to let it mature into the realization of oneness. The next week is the last talk until March. I must express a great joy at the way some of you have shown an inborn capacity to walk in Christ. It shows in many ways. We will never know the importance of it as individuals alone. But you will feel that great thrill of knowing that what you are coming into in your consciousness is part of an infinite divine plan. You are lifting the consciousness of the world as you are able to let your self express without a human barrier. I hope to see some of you next week. Thank you very much.